an eating disorder scope. And obviously, when it comes to an eating disorder, there's medical complications and there's also the psychiatric complications. And that makes it a complex kind of thing because you have the medical reasons. And I know in Queensland, for example, they have this very certain criteria which they stick to, but they don't take into recognition everything else. Like if you're chronically ill, for example, with like POTS or something like that, where you already have these symptoms and they don't take into account of that. So I guess like it's really complex to like add that into it, I guess. Do you have any thoughts on the like protocol for that?
Yeah, so again, thanks for sharing that. And I don't have any, haven't done any specific research around restrictive practices and eating disorders. I think you talked about the kind of medical, physical health side and the psychiatric aspect. And I think that's a real challenge with what is understood as restrictive practices, because restrictive practices is often understood in law and policy as kind of interventions like restraint or restricting someone or secluding someone in some way in response to their behavior. It's not in response to medical treatment. So that means then that sometimes people can be subject to forced treatment or forced interventions that are justified on the basis of kind of medical need, and they kind of sit outside any regulation that we might even have as weak as it is in terms of restrictive practice. But yeah, I mean, I'm curious for either of your thoughts as people with lived experience. Is this idea of restrictive practice or this concept even spoken about, or is it
not really?
How do people describe it? Or
From my experience, I know, for example, from my experience, anyone who presents to a Queensland like a public hospital with anything to do with an eating disorder, they automatically get put under the acts. There's the two different ones there are here, and it just makes it really complicated, as you said. Like it's that you can see the medical reasoning, but it's also the way they do it is under the mental health reasoning, and that's just, it's frustrating, it's more traumatizing than anything else. And yeah, it's just a really interesting, I'm working on a thing about eliminating coercive practice in Queensland mental health at the moment, and I was reading that Queensland has increased, all treatment orders increased significantly following the introduction of 2016 Mental Health Act, and it continuing to increase. And in my mind, from my experience, that increases like being, as Belle's experiences as well, like being forced to take medication, getting an injection, stuff like that. It makes it, and like being forcefully tied to a bed as well. And that's just more traumatizing, honestly. I'm going to do more research into it now.
to answer your question, Linda, I had never actually heard of the term restrictive practices. I think that because of media and because of, I don't know, I think media is a massive actually influence in terms of how we respond to our care, because I think that or just like, for lack of a better word, just people's assumptions and thoughts about what a hospital should look like. And I think a hospital in general is often very different from a mental health hospital. And I think that even just this idea of, I remember being a patient for a brief time. In relative to my other hospitalizations, I went to a private hospital, and I think I was one of the very few people there on a treatment order. My experience in that hospital was very different from everybody else's. And I think that various types of conditions and illnesses are treated differently. Like Brody said, you know, with eating disorders, but in terms of psychosis and things like that, it's just like I expected as soon as I got to hospital. In fact, I actually almost used to think they're gonna keep me here. I think it's good that they keep me here. Whereas now I'm thinking, actually, would I be more comfortable at home or in some kind of setting where I didn't feel as if I was locked in? Because it got really bad, especially during the pandemic, when because my family has always been a massive, massive support for me and like a bit of a light at the end of the tunnel. Like they come and visit me every day, and I know that I can go home to them and stuff on leave. So visitors and leave were not allowed during the pandemic. And I understand that it's very important, to take the pandemic really seriously. And so I sort of felt, mixed feelings about it. But it just goes to show that for people who were never, granted leave because they were considered, too at risk or whatever, that you really are in a very carceral setting. Like it's obviously going to be different for everybody, because some people are there for a short period. Some people, I remember speaking to another patient, and I think they said that they'd been there on and off for like 5 years or something, that the doctors and nurses knew them really well because they'd just been in hospital for so long. And so I think that for somebody like me, because I haven't been in a hospital in 3 years, I'm feeling, like my recovery is progressing. But there are for some people who, for circumstances in their lives that their psychosis is recurring, or, they might have, substance use disorders and things like that as well. So, I'm really passionate about looking into these issues because I think that there are people whose lived experience is a very prolonged stay in hospital, and that means that their quality of life is really poor. And going back to what you said, in terms of marginalization, there were a lot of people who had no support systems. And so I am fortunate and privileged to know that when I got out of hospital, I was going immediately to initiate my NDIS plan, and I had DSP and things like that. So I think looking into restrictive practices will really vary to people's lived experience depending on what support they've got and what they look like, what how their lives look. So